CliffCentral.com.
Right, let's go. Let's go, let's go, let's go. People to see, things to do, places to go. Good morning, everybody. I hope you're ready for a big day. We've got lots to do today. It's Monday. Well into June, so there are no excuses anymore. Also, no surprises, because we know what to expect of June. June is like a wicked old witch who gives you nothing that you want and everything that you don't. That's just how she is. She's got a bad attitude. Cackles. She's mean-spirited. She forces you to wear lots and lots of clothes just so that you can get on with doing ordinary basic stuff. I will never in my life understand why there are people who enjoy dressing up for winter. You won't get it at all. All right, well, what a weekend. I mean, we could start off with two quite impressive things, or we could start off with something a little bit sad. I mean, you can decide. You let me know. You know, drop me a hint in the comments, and I'll follow your instructions. That's kind of how we run the show. And then we've got Leanne Moll joining us in just a moment or two. Got lots of other really cool things to talk about today, too. And Collectomania, Dr. Hanan. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's going to be a busy start to your day. Where shall we begin? The weekend is just full of stuff. If you watched TV and you stayed inside, and that was probably the most sensible thing you could do, you would have seen the tennis, which was amazing. I'm not much of a tennis fan, but I do like watching the best of the best competing against each other. And you got to say about that Rafael Nadal, right? Even if you don't like him, you got to say this guy, he's like a Rottweiler. He is just not him, Federer, Djokovic. Those three between them must hold all the records to the exclusion of pretty much everyone else. And to be alive at the time where those guys are alive is amazing. It's really phenomenal. So that was the one thing. Hello, Leanne Moll.
Oh, hello.
All right. There she is. How was your weekend?
Oh, all good. I went to a big shopping mall.
Oh, how frightening.
And they're still empty, hey?
Yeah, which one did you go to?
Well, Sandton City.
Sandton?
And I just wonder how these enormous shops with, maybe they'll sell one handbag a day.
Yeah.
Or a diamond ring.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw a tennis bracelet for 500,000 rand. Who's buying those things right now? And also, are people just buying stuff online? What's happening? The shops are empty.
What, you mean you didn't buy the tennis bracelet?
No, of course I did, Gareth.
Expect nothing less. You know,
there was no one there to see me buy it.
Oh, right. Okay, so you're looking for attention for the fact that you were well done on your purchase of that tennis bracelet. Yeah, I spent a lot of time watching TV this weekend, but I did have a really nice dinner party on Saturday.
Ooh.
I didn't cook.
Women invited?
Yes, lots of women. In fact, it was basically, there were eight of us all together. And one of the couples did all the cooking. The rest of us had to bring various things, you know, like someone brought the pudding and someone brought the bread and that kind of shit. But really, this one couple did everything. And they did an unbelievable job, like just beautiful, beautiful food. And it ended up being very, very smart. I was quite impressed because these are the same people I often get hugely drunk with. And, you know, we're used to all kind of knocking back shots and things. And here we were sitting at a well-appointed table, eating beautifully from, you know, the proper vessels that you should be eating from, drinking red wine, really very adult, which is, you know, it's about time, some people would say. But it was really quite cool because it felt, you know, we had fires going and it was so civilized. It was like, wow, this is, I feel as old as my parents when I do this kind of thing.
Well, I mean, considering that we're at the age when people used to die at our age in the Middle Ages, it's about time that our friends became more sophisticated.
Yeah,
right?
I think so. Well, I mean, it's the same friends, which is even more impressive. I mean, these people are very versatile. They can be drunken idiots, and they can also be like really, really sophisticated and smart and you know, presentable. Anyway, that was fun, but I did get the bad news about John Burke's dying over the weekend.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for you and Rena, because I know you really admired him and were close to him.
The horrible news always kind of hits you right in the throat, but this guy, I got to tell you, in South African radio, there is just no one who even comes close. And if you didn't know who John Burks was, and many of the people who listen to us might not know, and it wouldn't be your fault. John Burks was the first real celebrity in South Africa. He was also the first personality on radio. And he had a voice, and he had a sense of humor, and he had a feel for broadcasting that I don't even think when I'm at my best, I can be as good as him in that respect. He was just absolutely unparalleled. You know, I remember the first time I ever met Burks was at 702. I had been fired from campus radio, and I decided, fuck this. I'm going to go and see the best guy in radio, and I'm going to get a job from him. And it was his last show, so my timing was awful. I walked in. I hadn't made an appointment, and I said to his producer, a wonderful woman called Eleanor Moore, I said to her, please, you know, Eleanor, I don't know anybody else here. I don't know you. I want to just meet Burks because I know it's his last show today. And she said, all right, well, just hang around. He finishes his show at 9, and I'll see if I can get you to meet him. And I just waited in the lobby. There were all these famous people walking past me. You know, remember in those days, radio was a big deal because we didn't have TV celebrities. We didn't have movies being made in this country. There were no famous people except the people on radio. And they were the people that you'd listen to, as I had with Burks, every day on your way into school with your mother. And he finished his show, and he came out, and everyone was saying goodbye to him and bringing him presents. And I thought, oh, he's never going to have time for me. Anyway, he said, come in. So I went and sat in his office. He had an office, you know, and to be the talent and actually have an office, you were a big, big deal. And it was decorated with, people had drawn cartoons of him. There were paintings. There were little statues of him, you know, that people had given him over the years that he was busy putting into boxes and things. And I sat down with him for a few minutes. He said, oh, why don't you tell me about what you do in radio? And I said to him, well, I've just been fired. So he said, oh, my God. He started laughing. He said, what did you do? So I started telling him, and he just wanted to hear all the stories suddenly. And he said, look, I'm leaving here, but I want to introduce you to someone called Rena Brumberg. And she's not in radio either at the moment, but let's see what she can do. Anyway, so he passed on her number. I, of course, immediately called her as soon as I got home. We didn't have phones, cell phones, or if we did, they were crap. And I had a landline number for her. And I remember calling her, and there was this voice on the other end of the phone. Hi, this is Rena. I went, hi, I got your number from John Burks today, and he said, I must come and see you. She said, I'm not really in radio, but let me see what I can do. And I went and saw her, I think, 2 days later. And that was where my commercial radio career started, because she arranged, along with Eleanor Moore and some other people, for me to do, like, I don't know, some late night, terrible, terrible producing job. I was awful as a producer. I hated it. I was this close to giving up on radio, but I'll never forget that John Burks gave me that break. He introduced me to my business partner, someone who, you know, we've all become friends. I became friends with John. I became friends with Rena, people who were luminaries in my industry. And this man was a giant, because before any of that, before it involved me, he had already been the only guy who'd ever been on a billboard, for example, on the highway. He was larger than life. He had this extraordinary voice. He had characters. I mean, the voices and the accents and the characters and things that he could do. I remember he fooled people like Saul Kersner into thinking he was Ronald Reagan. He could do just about any voice that you could imagine. He did these. He was the beginning of those prank calls, those fun calls, which others have tried and have never got to his level. He was just the best. And radio has lost someone extraordinary, and heaven has gained someone, you know, to broadcast to everyone else. So his new show is much, much bigger than any show he'd ever have here. I get a little bit sentimental about these things, but then I have to pull myself back. He's got two wonderful children, Lance and Charisse, who are obviously in the country. Lance just flew in for the funeral. And and grandchildren, whom he loved to pieces. And I asked him, because I had this amazing, amazing coincidental occurrence about 2.5, maybe 3 months ago. I went with Rena to visit him at his house. And he wasn't sick or anything. Yeah, he was absolutely fine. And we walked in and he made us tea. And, you know, he was funny. He was so funny. He was almost like a little bit kind of Larry David-ish. Because, I think Munda's made us. He had a wonderful partner for most of the time I ever knew him. She was with him throughout, Munda. And he and she lived together and they were very happy. And she was devoted to him and he was devoted to her. And she had made a whole bunch of stuff knowing that we were coming. And he said, "Oh, do you want some scones or some muffins or some cupcakes?" And, you know, he was kind of walking around trying to find us this stuff. And I sat down with him, and it was Rena's idea that we recorded the conversation, which I've got. So he said some amazing things. You know, I think there are people who say the soul knows, because he spoke a little bit about what he thinks is going to happen after death, what he feels life after death might be like, which if I think about it now gives me goosebumps. And he talked about his kids and his grandkids, and he talked about his radio career. He talked about all the people he'd met and the places he'd been and the shows that he just loved doing. And, you know, he got into people's hearts and souls. So I'm very, very sad that he's gone. But at the same time, I'm grateful that I could have shared a small part of his life with him, that all of us got to share a small part of our lives with him because of his show.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the godfather of radio has departed. So now we have to, you know, we have to look back.
He's somebody who changed the entire course of your life, Gareth, and introduced you to someone who is still so close to you. How many people can we say have changed the course of our lives? Not that they were just maybe people who were nice to have around, or people who might have given you some good advice, or who were fun, or, you know, people who actually changed your life.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I was as close as the people who were really close to him who lost him, and I didn't know him for nearly as long as so many of them did. But this guy, you know, we're poorer without him is the point. And that voice will live forever. So actually, he's the voice of our original, you know, kind of Cliff Central sound. That Cliff Central. No more bullshit. You know, we don't use that kind of jingle anymore. But no more bullshit. CliffCentral.com. He did all of that stuff for us as a kind of favor. The greatest voice in radio just said to us, "Yeah, well, sure, I'll do it for you for nothing. Don't even bother. It's no problem." Anyway, I just think it's great. So there he is. Yeah. He's gone. Then the other thing that was quite moving over the weekend, and I don't think I can really say I'm a through and through royalist. I think that there's a lot about the royal family that's silly. The fact that there are these people who are called Your Royal Highness or whatever. But it is part of, I suppose, my cultural tradition. You know, it's like if you're Zulu, you kind of respect that stuff, even if you don't really believe it's important.
Yeah.
I come from a family that's always been, well, I mean, at least three quarters of the family are about as English as they get. And the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, which I saw in bits and pieces. I didn't sit there the whole weekend watching it. It would have been much too boring. But I saw highlights on social media and I caught a little bit of it live. And it was just a beautiful celebration, not just of one woman, but of a culture which is still one of the best in the world, one of the most exciting to be a part of, one of the most interesting to watch, and something I think people all over the world kind of, you know, they just nod a little nod of respect to the British for having done what they've done over thousands of years. having added to the tapestry of humanity the way that they have. I don't really care about the political implications of the monarchy, or, you know, whether or not people really like Charles and Camilla or any of that shit. I just think here's an old woman who has put her heart and soul into doing the best job she could, and she got the job by inheritance, and she's done an excellent job of it. As a history student, I've studied the course of nations under certain monarchs, and some of them add value and some of them just destroy the place. And she has made an enormous impact on the lives of everyone who's alive on Earth today. I don't think there's a more important person. And by important, I mean someone who everyone in the world knows, who everyone in the world has respect for, who everyone in the world would recognize, than that Queen of England.
Mm. Yeah, and it's also, it's come at a time, I think. I mean, it's been 4 days of celebration at least. Jeez, and for the, everyone in the UK.
And the English are so, they're so over the top, right? I mean, you see these people having, oh, we've got the longest table in the world. We've set up about 2.5 miles of tables where we're going to eat sausages and pies and scotch eggs. We're going to celebrate the Queen with a couple of beers. And they take it super seriously.
Yeah, like 4 days of celebration and sunshine and happiness, mm-hmm. and, you know, putting aside all those things about whether or not a royal family is necessary, and, you know, the address that Charles made a few days ago, or weeks ago, sitting in a golden chair and talking about poverty across the country.
Yeah.
All of that aside, people have just been joyous and getting out into the garden and, you know, making neighborhood friends and having good celebrations.
Yeah, I mean, this is
after all the horribleness of COVID and things that we've gone through.
Yeah, this is the nation that we're all locked in their houses and terrified of each other and, like, reporting their neighbors just a short while ago. So it's nice to see the English spirit coming back, the British spirit coming back, because it's also the Scots and the Irish and the Welsh, even though I don't think they're really people at all. It's nice to see that they were allowed to join in too, weren't in chains, because really the Welsh ought to be in captivity pretty much all the time.
Oh my God, Gareth,
but
no.
Anyway, I mean, look, it's nice that the Queen allowed them to come. So it was all very cool. I think it's lovely that we live in a world where there's some people who just make it a bit more beautiful. If nothing else, if the monarchy is purely decorative, then let it be that, because it is beautifully decorative. Yeah, I mean, you know, I've got to say again, that Kate Middleton, the Duchess of Cambridge, who William married a while ago, and who I think everybody thought was very, very boring and quite middle class. I must tell you, that woman is exceptional. And she is setting she's setting the standard for where monarchy's going to go. She just looks and she does everything perfectly. I thought she was the actress and not Meghan, because Meghan fucked it up royally, if you'll pardon the pun.
Pardon the pun.
But this Catherine Middleton, I don't know that I've ever been as impressed with someone I've never met. And I include, like, the people I have met, frankly. She's a very impressive person. She seems like a terrific mother. Yeah. Those kids of hers are so well behaved. Even the littlest one, who, I mean, to get a kid to concentrate for as long as this. She's a good wife. She seems to be immaculate at every possible occasion. She looks fantastic. She sounds just perfect. She's just wonderful. She's wonderful. I can't imagine anyone better for that job. So that was probably my other highlight, was seeing her doing her thing. But anyway, I think it's all part of the icing on the cake that makes the world a little bit more interesting. If it was all just, you know, systems and governments and there was no decoration on top of it, it would be very boring. Because who cares who the, you know,
I mean,
Prime Minister of Scotland is? It's not really that interesting.
Mm.
And Boris got booed, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Boris and Meghan and Harry were there, I think. No one cares. But they got booed as well.
Yeah, look, there are very few real-life kings and queens and princes and princesses around the world.
Yeah.
Besides in Disneyland. It's good to have them around and to see what they're doing and imagine them living in their castles and letting them be. But they do have important roles to play as well.
I think they do.
And just a huge amount of tradition to carry through.
You hit the nail on the head, like tradition, because they're a link to the past in a way that, you know, very few modern things can actually link you to the past. And so many people don't care about history, so this is where I get on my soapbox and start nyeh, about history, but I'm not going to. It's just nice to see that certain things have survived the test of time, and usually it's because they're quite good. Usually it's because they're quite valuable. You know, we wouldn't keep it around if it was just, oh, well, that's nice. There's got to be a reason that it's there, and I think there is. And, you know, Britain has been, for at least all of my life, but certainly before that, for maybe 100 years before I'd come onto the scene as a living creature, had been the most powerful influence in the world. And
before you rocked up.
Yeah, and, well, I didn't fuck it up. I had nothing to do with it, but...
I said before you rocked up.
Yeah. No, I know. It's just, it's a cool thing to see. So lots of stuff happening this weekend. It was good and healthy and salubrious. I managed to get to gym, feeling good about myself. I've shaken off, thank God, touch wood, and I hope no more of it comes. All those sniffles and colds that I've had before, and I'm ready for this winter. I'm going to keep warm, keep fit, and keep on working. That's the plan.
Mm. Good thing. It's actually my birthday week.
Yes. Your jubilee.
It's my jubilee on Wednesday.
Yes. What are you going to do for it?
Well, it's always my mom and I, as you know, share a birthday. And it's her 70th.
Oh, big deal.
Which is pretty amazing.
Mm. It's actually it's my mom's 70 this year as well. See how old our parents are.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
So that means that both your and my mums were 25 when they had us.
Which is apparently that was considered an appropriate age when they had us.
It was quite late.
Was it?
Yes, for a firstborn, absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right.
But yes, so it's her 70th. And so we'll be going out to a fancy restaurant for
nice.
A spot of dinner.
How lovely.
yes. And that's why I was in Sandton yesterday, because I was shopping for her gifts, bought her some jewelry and a handbag.
Oh, so you did buy the tennis bracelet. Okay.
Exactly. I wasn't lying.
Wow.
yeah.
That's amazing. Nice stuff, Ash.
Well, it is, but it's certainly at a time when you've heard it all your life. You've heard adults all your life going, oh, God, I'm getting a year older.
Mm.
And I wish it didn't come. Mm. And we're definitely at the age now when we're saying the same thing.
No, I was like that at 28. You know that. I stopped. I pretty much stopped celebrating birthdays at 28. But I'm not going to be grouchy and grumpy. In fact, I am looking forward to another very busy week this week. I've got some new things that I'm going to be busy with, and that's inspired me too. I felt like after COVID, everything had just kind of gone, and I'm filling my plate up with all kinds of good shit again, like making sure that I've got loads of things to keep me entertained and amused, and obviously busy as well, and in a productive way. I don't want to just have fun. Even though that sounds like a really ideal way to live from here on in, but I'm building some things, so just hold back. I'll let you know as soon as we're ready to go on any of these things. But it's going to be exciting.
More distractions to keep us busy until we die.
That's a very depressing way to think about it. But I don't think of them as distractions.
That's what we do.
No, I think of it as stuff that you can build and make and. That can create interest and value for other people. I love the idea that you can make things, and when you are no longer here, those things can carry on. So that's what I'm looking at. And so far, all of my life has been about me being the product, which I'm just not interested anymore. So the things I'm working on are not going to involve me as the product. I will just be in the background. Very cool. All right, a couple of comments. Comment section is full of absolute nonsense this morning, but anyway, lots of people talking about all sorts of shit. EP47 says, how's it, Gary? I found your place in Benoni that allows you to braai your own meat for free. They also give you a complimentary salad. I was so impressed. Benoni, that's quite clever. That's quite that a lot for like Benoni. That sounds very classy for Benoni. Rebellious Ruth says, I looked up all the different uniforms and wanted to know how and what they all mean. Found a bit, Gareth, do you know and understand all the ranks? Okay, yeah, so I'm not the guy. My dad is obsessed. I think he only had tin soldiers when he was a kid. He's obsessed with armies and marching and formations and rank and insignia. And his favorite thing, I happened to coincidentally be in London with my mum and my dad when they went to watch Wimbledon in 2019. And they stayed at a very lovely hotel in London. And my dad forced my poor mother around horse guards where they do all the parades about, he must have walked through there, she says, 50 times. That he was so obsessed with horse guards. So that's his favorite thing. If you really want an expert in all that stuff, my dad could talk for hours about the difference between the buttons on the Grenadier and the Coldstream and the Scots and the Irish Guards, and whether it's 333, 222, 11111. He knows all that shit. And he told me, but forgive me if I don't remember all that kind of thing. It's not priority number one to me. But yeah, Ruth, it's interesting to know all of this shit. And all of it has some foundation in history. You know, some of it comes from fighting the Crimean War or fighting against Napoleon or even earlier than that in some cases. I mean, they brought that old gold state coach down the Mall, which is amazing. It was built for King George III. So that's so old. I mean, he was Mad King George.
Yeah.
So it was built for his coronation. That's the 1700s. The mid-1700s. That's an awfully long time ago. And you think that thing still drives. You'd kind of expect it to be falling apart by now.
Polishing that thing up.
Oh, my God. And then they actually gild it, which means that they take gold leaf and they re-gild it every couple of years. So it's probably got a layer of gold about half an inch thick on it now. Who knows? So, this is very cool, and I love this, and I want us to do this all over and with all the things. So Ryanair is making South African passengers take a general knowledge quiz on their country before letting them board. I love this. I think people should be forced to take general knowledge quizzes to get into restaurants, to go to shopping malls, to be able to buy groceries, to be able to get into public transport. You should have to prove that you've actually read a book or two. Otherwise, they shouldn't let you buy anything or do anything.
So here's the thing, is that they're actually making South Africans take a quiz on South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Before letting them on board, right?
They should.
And that's in order to prove that they are, in fact, South African.
Right.
And the reason being is that they're trying to prove that people from South Africa or not South Africa are using fraudulent passports, South African passports.
Good.
In order to get onto flights to and from the UK. So, but here's the thing that's absolutely hilarious for me, is that this questionnaire that people have to fill in is only available in Afrikaans.
Okay, no, that's no good.
Okay.
No.
Of course, it's one of our 11, actually 12 now, official languages spoken in South Africa. But it is less than 14% of our population, which actually speaks Afrikaans, right? So the funny thing for me is that they're trying to prove that we're South African, thinking that we all speak Afrikaans. They even
Big error.
Yeah, huge. They even say, well, it's one of the biggest languages spoken in South Africa. They call it one of South Africa's most prevalent official languages.
Okay. Well, That's it, but it's not, I mean, Zulu's by far the biggest, right? English and Zulu are way bigger than Afrikaans, by a long way. But what are the questions? Because I want to try some of these.
Okay, so...
See, because I am busy saying, yo, you must take a test, and then I fail it. Be embarrassing. What do you got?
Apparently, some of the questions include, what is the country's national flower?
Protea.
Yeah, the Protea.
Protea. The Protea.
What are three official languages that are spoken in South Africa?
IsiXhosa, Sepedi, Afrikaans.
Zulu.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. So apparently some passengers have actually requested the form in English, but they've been completely rebuffed because they're supposed to speak Afrikaans. And if they are unable to answer the questions due to language difficulties, it's considered proof that their passport is fraudulent.
Now you suddenly wish you'd done Afrikaans at high school just so you can hop on a Ryanair flight. By the way, Congo Chris very cleverly says it's not Ryanair, it's a Ryanair. All right, what other questions have we got?
Those are the only two that I can pick out of this article. Okay. It doesn't go further. But I'm sure that we could find somebody, if someone's listening, who's actually done one of these tests.
All right.
There was a woman who was denied her flight from London Stansted to Dublin because she failed a test.
But she's going to Dublin. How can they give her a South African test on Dublin? I mean, you know, if you're going to Dublin, what the hell's that all about?
Maybe it was a connecting flight, perhaps. She had to actually raise the whole issue with the supervisor. She had to show other forms of ID, and then only then was she eventually allowed on board the flight.
All right, but the point is, this is a good thing, and people should be forced to do a little bit of general knowledge. I think it should actually be a subject at school. You know how many people I meet who are boring? They're just boring because they've never bothered to learn anything interesting. You can sit with them at a dinner party, like I was talking about on Saturday, and if you end up next to this boring person, you're going to have an awful night. It doesn't take much. Read a book, you know? All right, so we got some headlines for this morning. Let's take a look at what's actually going on in the news, because this is important for us to be able to figure out our way through the day today, and there's plenty of news after the weekend, so where shall we begin? Let's start off with John Burks, who I spoke about earlier. John Burks, of course, South African radio veteran and legend. People use that word far too often, but really an extraordinary man. And I see that even Eyewitness News, which is a part of 702, which Burks helped launch, you know, there was no 702 really before John Burks came along, and he was the talent that made it fly. Legendary 702 broadcaster John Burks passed away at the age of 80 after a long illness. Former colleagues and listeners have paid homage to Burks. He revolutionized morning radio in South Africa and was known for his prank calls and his quick wit. He's also being remembered as one of the most listened to broadcasters in the country's history. All of that absolutely spot on. So go well, Burksy. And we've talked about that already this morning. If you want to hear more about what we have to say about it, you can listen to the first part of the show this morning. Lots of people talking about the Jubilee concert, which we've also addressed. There were some really good performances there. I saw that Alicia Keys pitched up. I saw Ed Sheeran was there, but I didn't watch the whole concert, so I'm not the guy to tell you whether or not it was amazing.
Didn't we call her Alicia Mkize for a while?
Alitria Mkize, correct.
Oh, yes.
The first
South Africanized her.
Correct. The first forensic expert to arrive on the crime scene where Senzo Mieo was murdered did not perform gunshot residue tests on people who were present when he was shot. I mean, you know, we have... Do you remember, Leanne, we went on a tour of the forensics and ballistics department at Pretoria, the police, yeah. And we were so impressed. They have DNA labs, they have, you know, forensic specialists, people who look for drugs, people who can tell you which gun a bullet came out of. And clearly, when these Keystone cops arrived at the Senzo Mieua murder site, they didn't do any of this stuff. It just, again, makes me think, this is one of the countries in the world where the chances of you actually being arrested for something terrible are minimal. So it was revealed in the North Gauteng High Court on Friday, five men are on trial. that he was shot at his girlfriend's house in Foster Arrest. We know that. And these guys who were all there and arrested and charged with the murder 6 years later, none of them were tested for gunpowder residue. So, come on, guys. Basics. Let's get the basics right, you know? This is not rocket science. Ramaphosa's stolen millions continues to be a story. This was revealed last week. Actually, we had a discussion with Pumi on the Burning Platform about this, that Cyril had all this money in cash that he had on his farm in Limpopo. Information obtained from Amabungani points to a major cover-up in the theft of some $4 million, US dollars in cash. Now, let me just remind you that if you as an ordinary citizen have more than a certain amount of foreign currency in your possession, you are technically in contravention of the law and can be arrested. You know that, right?
I know, because I have a lot of that sort of money lying around.
Yeah, Leanne has a safe full of... we shouldn't tell people that. Oh, anyway.
Zimbabwean dollars.
Yeah, Zimbabwean dollars. Now the criminal complaint against Ramaphosa laid... the criminal complaint laid against him by former spy boss Arthur Fraser on Wednesday has massively raised the stakes over what exactly happened. The key questions are, what did Ramaphosa do? What did he know? And why was it hushed up? Late on Saturday, the presidential spokesperson sent a message in response to detailed questions stating, "My apologies, because of the volume of detailed questions we have received, most of which we cannot answer due to pending investigation, we're going to release a statement later to address the issue. What we do know is authorities in Namibian law enforcement agencies were alerted to about 6 million Namibian dollars, which is about 6 million rand, transferred by the suspects into Namibian accounts between February and May of 2020. One of the suspects is someone called Emanuela David, a Namibian-born individual who also carries a South African passport, who was allegedly illegally crossing into Namibia around the 12th of June of that year. Amabungani reached David via WhatsApp, but he claimed we had the wrong number and didn't know what we were talking about, despite the number being confirmed by one of his friends. He then blocked us. This is interesting. It's getting really kind of saucy. By the 16th of June, Namibian journalists were already aware that he was allegedly linked to the theft of around 50 million rand from the farm belonging to Cyril Ramaphosa. You've got to ask yourself, you know, these rich people, and I include our president because he was a rich man before he was president.
Yeah.
And he only became a rich man because he was politically connected. To have $4 million lying around, you know, really, apparently also... this guy was found in possession of a Tag Heuer watch, which was worth $28,000, a Rolex watch worth $280,000, and a gold chain worth $163,000, plus 11 $100 US notes. So only 11 notes. What, did he change the rest into gold? Government sources told Namibian journalist Tileni Mongudi at the time, South African authorities appeared reluctant to assist or provide information. So what's really going on here, Cyril? Account for yourself. Because, again, it's going to be a situation where people go, oh, different rules for the president and for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Anyway, it all sounds very dodge. And very dodge.
It's to me, in my mind, I kind of imagine him addressing it in like one sentence during some other meeting.
Right.
And laughing it off.
In the last bit of news, and this is important, I think, I just love this. Elon Musk demanding that Tesla office workers return to in-person work or resign. The policy, which has been disclosed in leaked emails, was first reported by electric vehicle news site Electrek. Anyone who wishes to do remote work must be in the office for a minimum, and I mean minimum, of 40 hours a week or leave Tesla. This is less than we ask of factory workers. Musk wrote, according to this leaked memo, that the office must be the employee's primary workplace where the other workers that they regularly interact with are based, not a remote branch office unrelated to the job duties. He said he would personally review any request for exemption from the policy, but that for the most part, if you don't show up, we will assume you have resigned. Good. It's time for us to get back.
It's a complete 180, isn't it?
Get back. You know, there are so many people. It's so funny. I was listening to Bill Maher over the weekend, who I love his podcasts. There's lots that I don't agree with Bill Maher about, but I think he's just getting better and better. And he must be, you know, in his 60s now, and he's on fire. That guy, smarter than ever, doesn't care what the audience think. He is on a mission. He said he loves this, and he said he can't help noticing that the people who love working from home are people who actually have space, nice homes, gardens, someone to clean up after them. And the people who can't wait to get back to the office are people who live in fairly squalid conditions. And he said, it's funny that, huh? That we keep allowing the rich and the comfortable and the privileged people to work from home when the rest have to get back to work in the office. So I think that's an interesting
observation. It's so true. There's so many people who don't want to be at home.
No.
Who enjoy being away and
or can't because
time away from home
because they've got kids and other people, and it's impossible to work in that environment. I mean, so many people, you know, in South Africa in particular, we have people who live in fairly small, humble houses and neighborhoods where you don't have a lot of private space. Not a lot of people have a study at home, you know. It's very difficult for those people to suddenly be expected to make themselves available for 8 hours of meetings a day. And frankly, for many, the office is a place where they can focus, where they can get out of the house, where they can actually concentrate and pay attention to their work. I think that's very sensible. If you are able to work from home, good for you. And again, how many people are actually motivated enough to work from home and do it properly? Because that's the real tough question. You know, you can say you are, but how many people really are motivated enough to do the work?
And I think it's been tough as well for some people to say no to certain things, like family members saying, can you not just take Gran to her dentist appointment?
Or, oh, yeah.
You know, we had an excuse when we were in the office to say, I'm just not available.
Correct.
Full stop.
And remember, people are under huge pressure from their families too. You know, sometimes the family is like piling on the pressure that you've got to do this, you've got to be there for that, you've got to... I mean, it's crazy. I've obviously become... responsible again for a little puppy, which means now that I can't just up and go because someone has to look after this dog. It's like 4 months old and I can't just leave her on her own. So now I'm kind of asking family members to help, and my sister's got to like look after her while I go here, and my mom and my sister-in-law, my brother or whoever. And it's a responsibility. So I can only imagine how much worse it is for parents. Because you can't just palm your kids off on anybody. You know, someone has to be there to look after them. No. Anyway, a couple of comments here quickly before we get to Dr. Hanan. Carl DeSantos says, don't you think that Bill Maher looks like he has clammy, moist hands?
Ew.
I don't know about that.
That's that guy. Hi, my name is Neville.
Oh.
Gives you that soppy handshake.
Yeah. Congo Chris says, I'm not surprised. Cyril the squirrel squirreling away a few nuts. Playbook straight from the Zuma playbook. Yeah, you see, everybody thinks, and I don't know why the media, especially the big media houses in this country, seem so hell-bent on like cheerleading for Cyril. It's unbelievable. They're the same people who keep telling us every other day that Jacob Zuma is the most evil person who's ever lived. But they won't say a bad thing about Cyril. They just mostly ignore any of the stories about him that aren't great. On a different note, we're never going to have Ass and Borge together on a Friday anymore. Well, don't say never, because it's quite possible you will. I've got to tell you, Gord Laws sent me the funniest voice note the other day.
Oh, yeah?
Because he's in Ireland at the moment, I think. I think Gord may actually be.
Oh, did he go? Ryanair is his transporter.
Well, no. So he's got this character that, you know, he's Hard Eddie. I don't think we're revealing anything to anyone who's like never known. But he does that four ways boot Hard Eddie, right? Mm. I didn't realize he had a character called Roger, R-O-D-G-E-R, who's from Rhodesia. Listen to this quickly. This is hilarious. I'll just play it for you. Hang on a second. Let me just play this for you, if I can. Hang on.
Just wanted to go and check in with you and see how everything's going there in Rhodesia. Of course, I'm abroad with my travels, currently finishing up in Ireland. It's bloody magnificent, though.
Anyway, he's doing this, and he sent me like 10 voice notes over the weekend, Gord. So we got to get him on. Speaking of Fridays, maybe he'll be able to join us this Friday. All right. It's that time of day where we get to check in with our shrink. It's our it's our moment on the couch where we get to spill the beans. And it's going to be okay with Dr. Hanan Bushkin. It's great to have the doctor on every week. If you have a particular problem that you would like him to address, please email us, contact@cliffcentral.com, and we will put you on to him. Hey, Doc.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Nice to see you. You're looking,
nice to see you.
You're looking fresh and ready to tackle the week.
Absolutely. Freezing cold, but fresh. Sure.
So we've got Michelle who's on the line, and Michelle wants to tell us about a problem that is quite common, I think, in many relationships. She sent us a message, and this is what she said. I'm fairly certain that my husband is depressed. After 8 years of marriage, I'm at my wit's end, and his moods and anger, I feel like I'm walking on eggshells all the time around him. He has spurts of good days, but even those are tainted with mood swings, lack of interest, and central gloom, general gloom. So she says essentially that she's being gaslighted or gaslit, and she wants to know, Doc, what you think of this. So I'm going to put her on. Michelle, we're not going to put on your video, but we'll put you on with just audio so that you can explain to the doc in your own words what's going on here, and maybe he can give you some direct advice. Hey, Michelle, how's it?
Morning. How are you guys?
Good. Thanks for bringing this to us. I know that sometimes people are a bit nervous to share this kind of thing, but who knows? Your story might be able to help so many others who are going through the same thing. I don't know why, but Dr. Hanan has just disappeared, so let me just try and get him back. But did I get that more or less correct, that you feel like, you know, your marriage is really getting untenable because your husband doesn't realize that he's depressed? Is that more or less what...
That's right, yeah. Look, you can tell Doc, he can show his face because my video is off, so it's not that frightening at this time of the morning. It's safe to come back, Doc.
Okay, let me get him... let me get him back up here, because otherwise there's no point. There's no advice Leanne and I can give you.
No. Well, I've listened to you guys long enough to realize that Leanne probably has a similar, if not worse, story. So.
She always has a similar, if not worse, story to pretty much everybody who's ever been on the show. Hey, Doc.
Love it.
I don't know why, but you disappeared for a bit there. All right, so
yes, I know. Let me
put you on to Michelle and let her tell the story to you in her own words. Go ahead, Michelle.
Great.
Morning, Doc. How are you?
Morning. How's it? How's it, Michelle?
So Gareth summarized the email that I sent through, but in a nutshell, it has been, I said 8 years. It's actually 10 years of marriage. Two small, great kids. But for the last, I would say, 7 or 8 years, I've been getting more and more lonely in my own marriage. I've had to jot down a few notes just so I could keep it within context, because I realize we have a very small gap here. So this is not a full session. But, you know, I'm walking on eggshells 24/7 around him. I never know when he's going to go from happy and laid back to being triggered by something that happens. And I think the biggest issue at the moment is he's being triggered by everything and every event elicits the same reaction. And by events, it's a small sort of thing from, let's say, a pizza gets delivered and it doesn't have the bacon on he's requested, or the kids are making a loud noise in the car. Small everyday things that happen in life that the rest of us have become used to dealing with. And I think I say to him, pick your battles probably 10 times a day, because it's exhausting watching him get so emotionally responsive to every single thing. He's then triggered so badly by something I will do that I'll get ignored for a day, a week, 2 weeks at a time. He tends to retreat. He'll go into the room and lie down and sleep for hours to a full day. And I'm left sort of trying to absorb the absence and buffer my children from a very, very quiet household. I listened to your show last week and you mentioned there needing to be an equal push and pull. And for me, the push is quite strong at the moment, but there's no pull. And so I want to stay in this marriage. I want to make it work. I know that there are good days and I want to try and get those back. I think my biggest issue and what I'm trying to get to is I do think he needs help, professional help. We have been in marriage counseling before, but I do believe he needs one-on-one help and potentially down the line meds. I've never, you know, I'm not a huge advocate for meds. I do believe talking about it can be the first step, but I don't know how to approach it with him because he is vehemently against any form of mental health. And I keep trying to explain to him, if I fell down the stairs and broke my leg, that visible injury, just because it's visible, makes it no less important than something going on in his brain. So my question to you is, can you fix my marriage of a decade? probably not right now, but what is your advice to me and how to broach it with him, how to go about trying to just help him manage, manage his moods and manage his reaction to every single little thing that happens in his life? Because I'm exhausted.
I hear you. And what you're describing, again, it's very, very common. I hear this quite a lot. I see many women and many men individually in my practice, and they say, my partner is going through this issue or that particular emotional problem or that particular mental health challenge, and they're either not willing to acknowledge it, or they acknowledge it but not necessarily willing to get some help. And the problem is that it doesn't just affect them, it affects the family unit, it affects the people that are around them. And you mentioned that you've got two kids, and I always say to parents that the moment you have kids, there's a responsibility not just for you to be better for you, but for you to be better for your kids. Because what kids tend to do is they tend to copy paste. They see and feel what's going on in their environment, and they go out of their way when they're old enough to go and repeat exactly what they feel. So human beings, we don't create what we want. We just recreate, we repeat what we know, what is familiar to us. And as a father, I'm sure he's got great love for his kids. I'm assuming you'll tell me if it's otherwise. And unfortunately, you know, kids adapt, and he comes home and the kids, I'm sure, love him and they accept him unconditionally. But behind the scenes, he's creating a pattern in them, a familiarity in them that is unhealthy. Because if you had to ask him, and I wish he was here, because if I had to ask him, would you like your kids to go through what you're going through? Would you like to your kids to live with through what you're living through? He would clearly say, absolutely not. And my feedback to him would be, well, that's exactly what you're creating. So he mustn't see the world through his eyes, because he's staying and he's remaining in his comfort zone. He must see the world through what he's creating in his kids. But I also want to tell you that the difference between, there's a great difference between logic and emotion. So you can explain to him all you want why he is, why his behavior is dysfunctional, why his behavior is not working for the rest of the family, why the patterns of what he's doing and what he's feeling and the way he's conducting himself is actually affecting everybody in a negative way. And logically, he might understand you, because he's obviously compos mentis. He has moments of maturity, and he'll look at you and he'll nod and he'll agree. But emotions work on a different frequency. So whilst he must understand logically, emotionally, once he hits that moment of immaturity, impulsivity, low moments, low moods, high moods, the logic goes out the window. So it's not about him sitting and understanding it, because I'm sure he can repeat it to you a million times in a very mature way. It's about him changing particular patterns. And the truth is, I see it, and this is a very, very common thing, is that the individuals that come into the practice that are severely depressed or are severely anxious or have these high or very low moods, they cannot help themselves. So as much as he would want to help himself, the truth is he can't pick himself up using his own shoestrings. He needs to get fundamental help. And so to answer your question of what should you do, I'll say two things. First of all, people change for one of two reasons. One, because they want to, or two, because they have to. Those are the only two reasons why people are motivated to step out of their comfort zone. Otherwise, why would you step out of your comfort zone? There's no reason. The brain is, the human brain and the human mind is really constructed to conserve energy, and we conserve energy in our comfort zone. Mm. So he's not motivated to step out of his comfort zone. He's going to stay within his comfort zone unless he wants to, or unless he has to. Now, I can tell you that we have no chance at the moment with him wanting to, because he doesn't want to. He wants to stay in his comfort zone. So what I suggest is that we make it a have to. We create not just the carrot, the wanting to change, but we create the stick. And what I suggest is that you set specific boundaries, specific restrictions, specific rule sets with consequences for him getting help or for him not getting help. So I would sit him down and I would go, right, the way the game is being played between us at this present moment, it is not working. It's not working for me. It's not working for you. It's not working for our kids, and it's not working for our family structure. Now, by the way, just as a side note, prize one, and I completely agree with you, is to stay in the marriage and make the marriage work, because nothing beats a solid, healthy family structure. Nothing beats that. That's healthy for everybody. So what I would say is I would turn to him and I would go, at the moment, the way the game is played between you and the rest of the family is not working. This is what I need you to do, and you can't help yourself. So I know you want to. I know you understand it. I know it's reasonable for you to make the change, but you can't do this by yourself. I'm happy to hold your hand. I'm happy to go with you to someone that might be able to get you from point A to point B. But let me explain to you what happens if you don't do it. If you don't do it, here are the consequences. Now, Michelle, I don't know what you're able to implement as a consequence, but maybe sit down, maybe spend a couple, maybe half an hour, 2 hours today, maybe by yourself or maybe with loved ones, and ask yourself, what am I prepared to initiate as a consequence? Now, I wouldn't go to consequence 10 and say to him things that, one, you're not able to do, or things that you're not prepared to do. So, for example, I wouldn't say, listen, if you don't seek help, then I am out of the marriage, because maybe you're not prepared to do that. But I would say, if, for example, you're not prepared to help, and I've booked a session for you, it's at Wednesday at 2 o'clock. I'm coming to pick you up. We're going together to see professional A or professional B. And if you don't come with me, then I'm going to have to move in with my sister. Or if you don't come in with me, then unfortunately what will happen is I'll have to pull back from our relationship. If you don't come with me, then I'm going to initiate consequence A, consequence B, or consequence C. Because otherwise, if you don't initiate or use the stick, then he's not motivated to actually make the change. That will be your first step, at least from our perspective.
Wow. And that sounds so logical and simple in its application. But my issue is that he is in complete denial about there being anything wrong. So yeah. To answer your first comment, he's a wonderful father, excellent dad. When people say mom and dad's babysits, we are equal parents. We share the load. From that point of view, he's wonderful. My children are quite nervous of him. They walk around on eggshells as well. He does not see it. And every time it comes up, He will stand up and leave the room and not speak to me for weeks. I can't even broach the subject with him. And if it does get to the point where we are then able to get into a discussion, excuse me, not used to talking this much this early in the morning, when we are able to get into a discussion, he will then turn it around and blame it on me and make me look like I'm the one with the issue. And I am by no means a perfect human being, but so, I'm fully aware that I am not.
You know, Michelle, we're definitely going to run out of time, but you must email me directly, and I want to guide you. I don't want to leave you hanging. But I will say that, as you can see, by the way, that he's using consequences against you as a reason to step within his comfort zone. So he's saying, I'm not going to change, and if you force me to, then I'm not going to speak to you, and I'm going to initiate consequence X, Y, and Z. So he's using the same strategy against you, and I would like you to turn it around, and not with the aim of punishing him, but with the aim of actually making him change and changing the family dynamic and the family structure.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I'll be in touch. Thank you so much for the advice.
You must be in touch.
Michelle, I'm really pleased that Dr. Hanan is going to be able to make time for you outside of this, because it sounds to me like a little bit of a complicated situation. It's a lot more complex than what you said in your email, and I wish we had more time, but I'm sure that you guys can come on and give us an update once things have started moving, and even if that's a couple of weeks, months in advance, I think now we're all part of the story, and you can obviously keep yourself, well, keep yourself
it's
anonymous.
Been 10 years. What's another couple of months? Right,
exactly. But chin up, and obviously we'll be thinking of you with this very awkward situation you have to deal with, and I appreciate you bringing it to us.
Thank you. I appreciate your guys' time and support. Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it. Sure. Have a lovely rest of your week.
Thanks, be in touch, Michelle.
Thank you. All right. We'll make sure we get Michelle in touch with you, Doc. But thanks for that.
Yeah, tough pleasure. Time. You know, these situations are really complex and complicated. And this show, even though we spend 10 or 15 minutes on a particular issue, there's longevity. And obviously, we're prepared to continue the conversation until we get the help. And there's always help. There's always a solution, for sure.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Dr. Hanan Bushkin. It's always good to see you. We will catch up with you in a week's time.
See you then. Have a good week, guys.
Very good. And if you have a problem of your own or something that you want to bring to our attention so maybe we can help you, and by helping you help other people, as in the case of Michelle, then let us know. Send us an email. contact@cliffcentral.com. We want to hear from you. It is 7 o'clock. We'll be back with a whole lot more, including Collectomania, coming up next. Leanne Moll and I are ready to keep you busy all of Monday morning. Cliffcentral.com.